White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 552.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with TheWarEagleReader.com, and, of course, by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, you out there in podcast land, you are our Patreon.com family, and we really appreciate you this week for a reason you'll find out in just a minute. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, I'm kind of having kind of out of breath tonight. I've been in like a kind of a dusty old house, doing a lot of furniture moving and stuff today. So hopefully I'll get through this without if I collapse down off of the camera here where you're seeing me, just carry on without me. Just keep talking, and eventually I'll be revived and I'll hit the stop button. So we'll have a really long episode. Yep. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Happy 4th of July to you and all the listeners. And you probably got to get some nice fireworks background noise tonight because it's July 5th, but my neighbors, you know, have unexpended ordnance and they're going to shoot it. So,
and not only are our listeners going to hear the fireworks so well because those people are out there shooting it, why else are our listeners going to hear the fireworks so well?
Because John is broadcasting into a new, better microphone to improve our sound quality, because we genuinely care about the sound quality on this podcast.
We do. And you've had one for a number of years now, and it kind of, I think, had run its course and needed to be taken out back and shot in the head and rolled in the ditch, like I did mine a couple of years ago. And so we, thanks to the patrons, this is the kind of thing that you guys make possible for us. We were able to get John a nice new podcast microphone that is like broadcast standard, the same kind that I use. So hopefully we both sound really good now. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we appreciate you guys out there so much. And I'll get around to thanking you in a little while when we get to that part of the program. But meanwhile, we have various news items to talk about this week. Now, we talked a little bit about name, likeness, image couple of weeks ago, and it has gone into effect now as of, I guess, July 1st, at least in Alabama. Is it true everywhere, or is that just an Alabama thing?
No, that was everywhere. The NCAA rolled it out July 1st.
Okay. So for those like me that just don't really comprehend everything that this means, where does everything stand now, if you know?
Basically, college athletes, whether they're football players or any other sport, can sign deals for specific things to make money. The money is not flowing through the colleges. The individual athletes are signing deals with, you know, companies to endorse their products, to do promotional appearances, you know, autograph signing kind of things. So at some examples from Auburn players, different sports. I mean, the big one that came out the night that names, image, and likeness launched was Bo Nix. Had an endorsement promotion thing for Milo Sweet Tea.
I love it.
And there's just some other ones, some other Auburn players. I mean, I think like one of the former Auburn players, maybe one of the special teams players, has like a sprinkler and landscape lighting company. And they signed a deal where like Daniel Carlson is promoting this landscape lighting company. There's a app where you can basically, you know, like pay players and they'll play video games online with you. And a number of Auburn players are on there.
Wow.
And there's some who are designing their own logos and apparel and that kind of stuff. So that's exciting to see. So that's what's going on out there. We've seen some, you know, players from different schools sign different deals with different companies, some national, some local. I think we're going to see a lot of local kind of stuff. But I also think it's going to be different. You know, I think our new Olympic gymnast is honestly going to end up being the highest paid Auburn athlete in this deal. But it's going to be interesting to see. And there's a, you know, a lot of players are, I'm sure, are just like, hey, I just want to get the lay of the land here before I jump into anything and see what's out there. So, but I'm happy for them. They can make some money.
Absolutely. This is one of those things. I was talking with my wife about this the other day, that it's one of those things that's just inevitable. I mean, you know, amateurism and the Olympic spirit and, oh, you're doing it for a scholarship and all that, that was great for a very long time. But in today's day and age, having old men mostly making billions of dollars off of young people risking their physical health on a regular basis and getting very little in return for it themselves, it just looks so bad that I feel like it was inevitable that model couldn't stand up anymore. It could stand up in the 1970s or 80s or whatever, but we're just to the point now where people's sensibilities are not going to tolerate that kind of arrangement anymore.
Well, I mean, back then it was more, we made just enough money to pay the bills, to pay for the scholarships and the equipment and stuff.
Right.
And a little bit. And now we're, you know, the budgets of athletic departments in the SEC are in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So.
Yeah. Oh, another point that reminded me of just now, you talked about the gymnast, the young lady that's the gymnast mm-hmm. that we signed that's going to be in the Olympics. Somebody said that she may be, at the time of her signing with Auburn, the highest rated athlete in any sport ever to sign with Auburn. And I'm like, because we know we've had some who, after the fact, we look back and go, you know, like Bo Jackson, Charles Barkley, Cam Martin, you know, these kind of people, Rowdy Gaines, you know, Frank Thomas. But at the time of signing, she's already considered basically what they are by the time they're in the pros. So
that's maybe, fair.
Yeah.
Relative to the rest of her sport. I mean, I have to think about that. I don't know about in every other sport the players we've signed, but it's fair. Like, I mean, she beat Simone Biles in a routine in one round, and that's the first round Simone Biles has lost since 2013. So that was pretty good.
Wow.
So the big question coming out of name, image, and likeness is, should we engage a player to endorse or promote the podcast?
Ah.
And if so, who should we go after?
And, you know, I know that, okay, when you first mentioned this to me the other day, I'm just kind of like, you know, like emoji of the big round eyes. And I was just like, really? And I thought, well, okay. And then I thought, there's got to be one Auburn player that's perfect for this, but I don't know who it is. But somebody will know. Somebody's going to say, what about this person? Because blah, blah, blah. And you and I will be like, oh, of course. But I don't know who it is right now. So
I agree. So I think this is a question for the listeners that we want your input. Who should that be that we engage with to promote our podcast, whether it's just promote, you know, tweeting about it, putting it, you know, whatever out on Facebook or, you know, recording an intro thing or whatever. So who should we engage with to do those things to promote our podcast and to put some money in their pocket? So,
and that's good thinking in terms of how to use them too. I like that a lot. That's good.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll see what, again, as always, you can reach us at AU Wishbone on Twitter, at JK Ringer. Send John your suggestions, or just if you want to just email auwishbone@gmail.com, and we'll see what you come up with. I'm really curious.
And tell us who we should pick, but also why we should pick that person.
Right.
Not
exactly.
Just a vote, but we want to give us some why it makes sense.
Not just your favorite player. Well, I really like, you know, Tank Bigsby, so. And by the way, I don't know if we could afford Tank Bigsby, so let's be realistic about it here. Let's think of somebody that we could afford, because after all, it'll be your money, patrons, who probably foot this. So use that money wisely, but strategically. You know what I mean?
Well, and I would say, like, again, the patrons, you're all bagmen after this.
They are. Yeah, you get to, man, that's going to be a new thing I'll have to add in on why you should go and join the family is you get like an official AU Wishbone Bagman t-shirt. That's the next t-shirt, John. We got to remember this. We got to remember AU Wishbone official Bagman or something, or bag woman, I guess, or bag person. I don't know. I like it.
I like it.
All right. Okay. So we'll see what the folks say about that. All right, I had a little thing I just added at the last minute because One of our sources for the book, and we'll update the book in a few minutes, is an occasional poster on an Auburn group, email group that I follow. And he had a really interesting breakdown of 4 and 5 star athletes and what conferences they tend to go to. And those of you that know this already, it won't be a big surprise, but this is kind of like one of those your jaw kind of hits the floor moments if you're not fully aware of this. So I'm going to just tell you a couple of things here in just a second. But I want to ask you this first, John. This came about because there was a conversation going on about our recruiting right now. We went into June saying, oh, man, June is the big month. This is the time that Auburn's going to have all these people on campus. We're going to clean up. We're currently like, and I know, I mean, you know, it's early days and all that. Alabama's like 20-something right now. We know that's not going to last. But in the national rankings, Auburn is like 74th in recruiting for 2022, and we are 14th in the SEC, meaning last. We have 2 3-stars and a 4-star right now. So should we be concerned about the 2022 class right now, or is this just, it's going to change any day now and whatever?
I don't think we should be concerned right now. I am done being concerned about recruiting in June and July.
That's good advice anytime.
I think it is. If you're really agonizing about recruiting in June and July, my suggestion is, like, you know, put down the phone and go outside for a while.
Go outside for a while. I like it. Yeah, well, I hope that that's the case. Let me just share with you some numbers that are kind of mind-boggling. This is just basically why you have to recruit so well in the SEC is because almost everybody else in the SEC recruits so well. And you might say, oh, I know the SEC is a little better. Oh, no, my friend. The SEC is not a little better. It is ridiculous. And see, I think here's the thing. All the other conferences have 1 or 2 teams that recruit at that level, and everybody else is a step below. But the SEC has like, what, 6, 7, 8 teams that all think they can recruit at that level and year in and year out could be at that level. I mean, we've had 2 years where Missouri was in the SEC championship game, and we haven't even seen Texas A&M in the SEC championship game yet, and they were at that level, you know? It's ridiculous. Not to mention Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, Florida, LSU, no other conference, right? So here really quickly. In 2018, I'm going to do 2018, 2019, and 2020, 2021. I'm just going to run through these real quick. How many 5-star players, 4-star players, and then number of teams that didn't sign any of either one. In 2018, the ACC is our nearest competition. The ACC had 6 5-star players signed in the entire conference, 65 4-star players in the entire conference, and 2 teams didn't sign any. The SEC that year, and that was our nearest competition, John. Others are below that. Every other conference is below that. But the ACC was closest to us with 6 5-star players, 65 4-star players, and 2 teams didn't sign any. The SEC that year had 10 5-star players, 115 4-star players, and Missouri was the only team that didn't sign any 4 or 5-star players. All right, 2019, our closest competition that year was the Big Ten. They had 7 5-star players, 67 4-star players, and 3 teams didn't sign any. So 7, 67, and 3, right? The SEC had 20 5-star players, 134 4-star players, and only Vanderbilt didn't sign any. That's like double of second place. And again, the other conferences are below that. All right, 2020, our nearest competition was the Big Ten again. They had 4. Let me do them head-to-head this time, like category by category. In 2020, the Big Ten signed 4 5-star players. The SEC signed 15. This is our next competition down. This is number 2 out of the Power 5. The Big Ten signed 66 4-star players. Guess how many the SEC signed? 134.
More than twice as many.
More than twice as many. And again, Vanderbilt. Wah, wah, wah. Okay. 2021, the nearest competition, the Big Ten and the ACC were very close, but once again, it was the Big Ten. The Big Ten signed 8 5-stars, SEC 15. The Big Ten signed 63 4-stars, SEC 103. The Big Ten had 11 teams. That can't be. It must be one. And we had one. Okay. Now, where did it go? Okay. Percentage of 5-star players. Percentage. All right. Like if you took all the 5-star players in those classes, what percentage went to the SEC? 48.2%. In other words, right at half the 5-star players went to the SEC, and the other half went to the other four conferences combined. And the final thing I've got for you, which is kind of mind-boggling, only the Big Ten signed more 5-star players as a conference than Alabama or Georgia. If you took all the 5-star players the entire Big Ten signed, it's only more. They're the only ones that signed more than Alabama by itself or Georgia by itself. I mean, good gosh. All right. I just thought you might like to know that. And it's kind of mind-boggling. And it shows how think about it. Gus was reeling in top 10 recruiting classes. And all that was doing was keeping us competitive at like 8-5. Now, we can coach them up, but if we don't keep pulling in that caliber of class, we're in trouble.
I mean, that's very stark, right? Yeah. And dramatic, yeah. Those numbers.
Yeah.
And Auburn is certainly not in a position right now to gain on anybody. But you're right that we can't fall too far behind either. That's the real danger.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big believer in those numbers because I believe in the blue chip ratio, mm-hmm. which is the thing that Bud Elliott does every year where the percentage of your roster that's mostly 4 and 5 stars needs to be over 50%. Mm-hmm. And if it is, that puts you in the category of teams that can win the national title. Mm-hmm. And it's about 15 teams nationally that are always about there. And Auburn has been in that group.
Yes.
But we're like at, whatever, 59% or something. So we can't fall too far down or we're going to miss it.
And they're usually 4 stars. It's not like we have a lot of 5 stars.
That's right. So, we need to keep the recruiting up, and they got to move the needle on it. I'm not panicking right now, but in the long run, you're right. You can't, I think these guys may be able to identify and develop players well, and maybe that can help close the gap if we keep recruiting at the same level. But we can't drop down a couple levels in recruiting and have any chance.
We need the same recruiting Gus was doing or better and with better coaching.
Yes.
And I think we're going to get better coaching, but the recruiting has to be there too or we're in trouble. We'll see. All right. You wanted to look at tight ends this week. We've covered a lot of positions. There can't be very many left.
It is. Let's go into the tight ends. All right?
Yeah.
So this is looking at the all-time Auburn tight end group and who's in there, what do we think of them? And so I think it's a weird position historically. In the early days, Auburn had a lot of great tight ends under Pat Dye, many of whom did not often catch passes, but it doesn't mean they were not great players and went on to have really good NFL careers and that kind of thing. And then we've had some passes, some tight ends that are primarily receiver kind of guys, and some that are more kind of all-around blockers and receivers and did a little bit of receiving but a lot of blocking, strong point of attack too. And so a lot of those are from kind of the Dye era. And so, when you think about tight ends at Auburn, there are a couple of names I think that immediately come to mind, and one is easily Phil Plethenkirchen, right?
Yeah. He was as good of a pass receiver as any receiver we've ever had, yeah.
That's it. I mean, he made plays in the receiving game, and he was, a huge part of the offense in 2010 and 2011.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He was good in the end zone. He was good in the red zone when you needed somebody to get into the end zone on one of the – we had certain plays just for him, like the little tight end delay that scored against Alabama, yeah.
So I think a couple other guys, more recent guys that fall in this category may be, CJ Azama or Tommy Trott. Mm-hmm. And then some older guys, I think Cooper Wallace, Lorenzo Ooh. Diamond, and maybe the best all-around tight end Auburn that's ever had, Fred Baxter.
He was good. He was very underrated because he wasn't on a very good team, but he was a big part of the offense on that 91 team. It just wasn't a very good team, unfortunately, around him.
Yeah, he didn't have the same kind of offense around him the earlier or later tight ends had.
No. I mean, honestly, my favorite tight end was Walter Reeves. He was our tight end on the 87, 88 teams that were just so good. He was just one more big weapon on offense. You had Lawyer Tillman and Duke Donaldson and Freddie Wagan. Then you had old Walter Reeves. He could block. He could go out and catch a pass. He caught a touchdown in the Sugar Bowl against Florida State, I believe. I was a big fan of Walter Reeves. I thought he was everything a Pat Dye tight end could be.
So a couple other Pat Dye tight ends, and then we'll come back to one more fun to talk about. Ron Middleton and Jeff Parks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, both early kind of Pat Dye tight ends, but big blockers at the point of attack for those.
Big blockers.
Games.
Yeah, big wishbone blockers, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Edwards was part of that, too.
That's it. And then another one that's fun to talk about in terms of just potential was Robert Johnson.
Oh, in 2002, he was a big part of that offense. Bobby Petrino, our offensive coordinator that year, knew how to use him to great effect. You remember, I'll never forget, it was against Alabama that year. It was the year that everybody thinks of Trey Smith going wild, but Robert Johnson had as much to do with winning that game as Trey Smith did. And you remember that one of our touchdowns was that they put a defensive end on Robert Johnson, and Johnson just abused him, caught the pass, went around the guy, and went into the end zone without even getting touched. It was great.
He was, in terms of the most fun to watch, because he was so big,
yeah,
it was fun to watch him because he would catch the ball and just like run over the defensive back.
Yeah, the only tight end that had more yards than him in receiving in a year was Fred Baxter. And again, Fred Baxter was like 50% of the offense in 91. It was like, mm-hmm. I mean, name who else other than Stan White, name an offensive player on the 91 team besides Fred Baxter. You know?
Was Beasley on that team?
Maybe. Joe Frazier.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I mean, no wonder Baxter got so much work. But other than him, Robert Johnson. And Johnson struggled, too. I think he had issues in school and whatever, you know. He just was never a good fit. But, man, when he was good, when he was playing well and putting in the effort and everything, he was unstoppable.
He was great. And the only other one I want to mention is a great part of those Terry Bowden teams, Andy Fuller.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he ate Florida up in 94.
Mm-hmm.
Little gator play where he just kind of did that. He did a little hook route he'd go out and come back and they couldn't stop him.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great play. Anybody else of note? I'm trying. Tommy Trott was big. Victor Hall was also on that 91 team. There's somebody I wanted to. Oh, yeah, yeah. Cooper Wallace, you mentioned, but he was on the 2004 team. And he was just one more component on that loaded team with Cadillac and Ronnie Brown and Jason Campbell and all those great receivers. So Cooper Cooper was having to compete for touches with all those players and all those receivers. You know, you had Aroma Shadu, Obamanu, Mix, Courtney Taylor. There were so many great receivers on that team.
And the running backs caught the ball.
Yes.
They would throw it to Carnell Ronnie some too. So yeah, it was a tough spot for Cooper Wallace. But he would it. But because there was so much other talent, I think it really gave him some times to be just absolutely wide open.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The thing that strikes me though about the tight ends is that our greatest tight ends ever still only caught like 28 passes. You know, that's mm-hmm. considered like stellar. That average is like what 2.5 to 3 catches a game, maybe.
Yep. Yep.
So. We just never have thrown to the tight end a lot. Not like, is it, I guess maybe in like a Hugh Freeze offense, they get a big, tall tight end and throw to him a lot.
I mean, I don't know about Hugh Freeze, but we've seen other teams in the SEC. I mean, like Kyle Pitts, if you consider him a tight end at Florida,
yeah.
Caught a gazillion passes last year, but he was, just a really giant receiver playing, they called him a tight end, but he was a matchup problem. We've seen Texas A&M have some really productive tight ends, catch a lot of passes over the years. But, I think a lot of other schools are probably in line with all restructured. Georgia always seems to have a tight end that torments us. But
yes. Did you feel like C.J. Uzomah was used to his full effectiveness at Auburn?
No. But I also feel like, again, he was on the 13 to 14 teams, right?
Yeah.
And so it was a super productive offensive team both years, right?
Yeah.
He could have done more. He's been a very productive NFL player, had a good career. But I think he could have done more. But also, like, I think, you know, the 2014 offense we talked about was awesome. It was really good.
It was. Oh, you mentioned Lorenzo Diamond, and we haven't talked about him. He's not anywhere on the top 10 charts, but I remember him being a very good, very solid tight end for, was he a Tuberville guy? Maybe.
Yeah, he was a Tuberville guy.
What? Which era was it? Was he like 99, 2000, or was he more like?
I think he was an early Tuberville guy.
Yeah, I feel like that too. Okay. Yeah, but I do remember him having some good games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was several years. He was, you know, as the tight end, he was like the best tight end of the team and made plays and you know, I think he got some you know, third team all SEC kind of buzz or whatever, but a couple of years. But I mean, he wasn't a dominated player, but he was a very productive, solid offensive player for that team. He was a good recruit for Tuberville.
Yeah. Well, I mean, tight ends. What do you think about tight ends? If you're the offensive coordinator, are you going to be? How are you going to use them, if at all? Are you going five wide and you don't want a tight end? Or are you going to have them out there blocking every player? How do you use them?
No, I love tight ends. I mean, because you don't know whether they're going to block or go out, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if you get a guy who could physically do it, who has the size and the combination of size and speed and strength to do those things, that you had could be a really good interior receiver. And it could be a good safety valve for the quarterback. And they could kind of be like the queens on the chessboard, kind of. They can move around diagonally and open things up for other players and make a big difference. And I think we haven't used them to their full potential except in some years with some of the players we've talked about. And I think we have really good tight ends on the current roster. And I think we're going to see a bit of a tight end renaissance this year. That's what I'm going to predict.
Oh, very good. Well, we've certainly got several.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. All right. Any other thoughts about tight ends?
No, but other than it's an underappreciated position in Auburn history, and there's a lot of good, productive players that are kind of it's always a fan favorite position. How about that?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. They always are beloved because they're different. They're unique. They can do lots of different things. And like I said, it is, you know, they do so much blocking that it's always exciting to see one actually do something with the ball.
Well, and we need to point out, of course, our current defensive tackle tight end last year that was so fun to watch. That was a
difference. Oh, gosh. Pegues.
J.J. Pegues.
Yeah, that guy.
Again, I think he was very much in the Robert Johnson mold. A fun player, fun to watch.
Yeah.
And a real fan favorite, but now.
Alas,
will not be in the tight end.
Yeah. Oh, the Robert Johnson, the king of the Delta Blues players and a great tight end. The king of the Delta Blues tight ends. That's what I used to call him. All right. I accidentally skipped past your other thing. We were talking about recruiting and therefore what position groups are you most worried about, most confident in at this point? So it's a good question. I guess we're in the middle of the summer. It's July 5th going into the 6th as we record this. And honestly, right now, I mean, you know, the easy answer is always offensive line. But honestly, with all the movement that's been going on, I'm starting to get and wide receiver is a position we've been concerned about. I'm starting to get worried about running back. We just lost, and we don't think we mentioned this in the news.
Devin Barrett.
Devin Barrett's gone. What the heck? What's going on?
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, I think you know, some of it is, I think, the new freshman guy, Hunter from Mississippi, came in, and he looks good. People are happy. Jarquez Hunter. But, you know, so maybe Barrett felt like he was quickly going to get passed and be fourth string. But we need a fourth string running back, right?
Yeah, we do.
not ideal to go into the season with three running backs.
One of them a true freshman.
Yeah, and so, again, if you tell me our first two running backs are Tank and Shivers, I'm like, we're great, we're good, we're fine, right? But you don't want them to carry the ball 50 times in other games. So I think they still might look at somebody, you know, a transfer, a JUCO running back, somebody that could come in and just be a backup guy in the fall and take a few carries if they need to. So it's a worry. Worry at receiver is different. We have a lot of talent at that position, a lot of four-star recruits at receiver. but we don't have any experienced, productive players at receiver. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm actually kind of optimistic. I think we have a lot of talented guys there, given the opportunity. I think some of them can play. Kobe Hudson, Javaris Johnson, Elijah Cannon, Xavion Capers. I feel pretty good about those guys, yeah. Right?
I'd like to. I hope I can, yeah. And the tight ends.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I think we have some guys there that can make some plays.
Yeah.
So offensive line is a different story. I think we don't have anybody dramatically new coming in, right?
Not so far, no.
And we had some guys like Council that were banged up last year. We don't know if they're going to be 100% for the start of fall practice or the start of season. And so it's kind of the same group. And so on that position, you have to pin your hope on kind of the players developing as they get older and, that kind of stuff, more experience, but also B, that they work together more and they're more experienced cohesive as a unit, but C, different coaching, right? That's a position that I think, hopefully we have with the current coaching staff upgraded the coaching at that position over at where it's been the last 5 years or so. So
Lord, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody, the offensive line coach has been such a revolving door that I feel like even if any of them had been good, we wouldn't know because they were right back out the door again. I felt like the guy we got in last year just before we fired Gus actually seemed to know what he was doing.
Yes.
And then he's gone. So I hope the new guy, Will Friend. I hope he knows what he's doing. I'm still mad about the whole idea that we lost DJ Williams and Mark Anthony Richards. I understand Williams going to Florida State. I mean, if you're behind Tank Bigsby and you got a chance to go to Florida State, I mean, yeah, I can see somebody doing that. Richards went to like Central Florida, didn't he? He followed Gus to Central Florida. And you could have been, battling with Shivers for second string and getting a whole lot of carries. Cause I don't think we don't want Tank getting more than 20 carries a game, do we?
No, I mean,
he's got to last the season. So, he would have gotten plenty of playing time. So I don't know. But anyway, I don't know. Which is the position then that you're the most worried about? Let's put that one to bed.
I'm not incredibly worried about any position on defense.
No, I feel like they've really bolstered that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're solid there. I think, especially linebacker and secondary, I think we're going to be actually really, really good.
Yeah.
So I think it's got to be one of the offensive positions. Yes. It's within the realm of, to say, quarterback.
It is. Right? Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Right. Yeah. We have experience. Bo Nix coming back and different coaching. We hope it gets better results. But we got TJ Finley and Demetrius Davis behind him. I'm going to say still offensive line. I think you're right. I think I hear you at running back. I hear you at wide receiver. I think we're going to be fine at wide receiver. And I think we're talented at running back. It's just a depth question, right?
Right. That's always our issue.
Especially against the lesser opponents, could we get somebody else to soak up 20 carries at running back? I mean, again,
oh,
I think
yeah.
An invited walk-on at this point at running back would be fine, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely right. To use, let Tank go out there and get a handful of carries in those first two or three games and then put other people in there and give them lots of carries while Tank goes and hits the showers and relaxes and gets a massage and a tropical drink. Yeah, absolutely. That's what we need.
But we talked last year about kind of the limiting factor that the offensive line was and how it had to get better. If it was the thing that kind of held this team back at times, and in terms of the run blocking or the pass blocking, and it was okay, but it wasn't the end of the world, but it wasn't great either. And it has to be better. But I'll say this, I think the quarterback play has to be better too. We have to be more accurate, more consistent, more reliable at that position than we have been.
Yeah. So. And I'm sure that that's what Harsin and Bobo are spending a fair amount of time now, or whenever they're able to, is working on Bo's head and his mechanics and everything.
That's right.
Sure. And telling him, you get it together because we got the chicken parm sandwich coming in.
Finley's.
Yes.
That's only the older Auburn fans will get that reference.
But they will get it.
Okay.
So we didn't really say who we're most confident in. I mean, I guess, like you said, I think it probably we've done, but between the, I have a high degree of confidence in our current coaching staff on defense. From the top down, I feel very good about our coaching. I feel very good about our players. I don't think we're going to be quite back to 2019 up front. But other than that, I feel like they've, if there were any weaknesses, they've certainly been addressed in the transfer portal. I feel like our defense, it's not going to be lights out, but it's going to be very rock solid. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. I think our defense has depth and talent at all three levels. I think, I mean, at cornerback, I think we're going to be, you know, at secondary, I think we're going to be really, really talented, really good. Roger McCreary, Jalen Simpson, Nehemiah Pritchett, Drayshawn Miller, Rotarius Torrence. I think got a lot of good players back there.
Yeah.
And then it's safety, you know, we got Smoke Monday with Darius Tennyson. We got Donovan Kaufman. We got Zion Puckett. We got Amari Harvey and Bre'Darius Knighton coming in. We're going to be fine. You know what I'm saying? And we got some good players there, some depth, some talent, some experience. A linebacker, we got Zacoby McClain, Papo, Chandler Wooten, Cam Riley, Wes Steiner, Cameron Brown, Desmond Tisdall, and this Joko Willis guy coming in for two spots.
Yeah. So how come the linebackers look at that and say, "Oh, competition, cool," and the running backs look at it and go, "I'm out of here."
That's a good question.
Yeah.
And again, like it, we got the, you know, the outside linebacker position right now. We got Derek Hall and Caleb Johnson, but coming in, we got Dylan Brooks and the Eku Leota guy from Northwestern. So we still got T.D. Moultrie and Mella Height played a lot in those positions in the spring too. So we got all those positions, I think we're fine. I think we're going to be good.
Yeah,
so, exactly. I mean, defensively, I think we're strong. And you're right, I have a lot of confidence in the coaching staff over there, too, to put them in the right position.
Yeah, and special teams, solid, can't complain. I saw that, who's our punter? I can't remember his name. Dang it. Which is ironic, because the reason I bring him up is to say he's going to be our punter again this year. And he's trying to win the Eli Stove Award for been around the most years and is still playing, right? Because I went to the Auburn Missouri game in 17 in Columbia, and we met his parents, and he was punting, and he's going to be our punter this year. So 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. This will be the fifth year for sure. And he's been on and off the team. I know he left, he came back. But he punted before the Australian guy, and now he's back punting after, which is odd. You don't see that very often, right, where a guy punts for a while, then a new guy comes in for a year, and then you go back to the old guy again.
Oscar Chapman or Aiden Marshall?
Aiden Marshall. Yeah, I believe that's right. I'm pretty sure Aiden Marshall was the punter in 17, and they weren't thrilled with him. They brought in the Australian guy. He had his, you know, he had his day in the sun. He left, and now Marshall's back for, I guess he's on the Marshall plan for 15 years of punting at Auburn or something, along with
the Marshall plan.
Yes. You're welcome. You're welcome for that. You know, you tune in for the geopolitical references as much as you do for the football. All right, let's see what else we got going on. Any other thoughts about the position groups? I thought it was good.
No, other than if, you know, it makes you think about who, if somebody was out there, an early signee or something, who they might go after. So.
Yeah. All right. Quick book update. We have big book update news. I'm going to break a story that has not been mentioned yet anywhere on Twitter, on Facebook, on this program, anywhere. Breaking news. All right, well, there's two. First, the book, barring edits, additions, subtractions. In fact, I did go in and add something yesterday that was omitted. But barring anything that you come up with or that I come up with that we want to add, subtract, change, barring any of that, the book has been put to bed. It is done. The book is done. I mean, it's like ready to go to the publisher. It is done. It came in at 478 pages, John. 478 glorious pages of Auburn football.
I like it.
The cover is done. The book is done. It's got stuff in it. It's got everything that you and I talked about. It's got interviews. It's got commentary. It's got analysis. And it's got all kind of news factoids. Like, after you and I finished writing all the stuff that we got from our podcast and all that, I then took the month of June. This is what I've been doing in June. And I went through and researched through old newspapers for a month. Like, 7 hours a day. I kid you not. 7 hours a day for a month. I went through old newspapers from 1975 through 1998. And I got quotes so that every time you and I talk about something in the book, there's then a quote. Like, every topic you and I talk about, there are now at least 1, 2, 3, 4 quotes from Pat Dye, from Terry Bowden, from Bo Jackson, from Jason Campbell, from Cadillac. I mean, if you and I talk, well, no, that's a little too late, but it's up till 98. But if you and I talked about it and wrote about it in the book, I've got quotes and real-time, like, stuff that was happening at that time that I got straight out of research from. I mentioned on Twitter, I subscribed to the New York Times, the LA Times, the Montgomery Advertiser, and a couple of others. And I was just going through their archives, searching. I went down the Auburn schedule for every year in the book, which is 75 through 98. I went down the schedule, and if the game was played on November 3rd, I looked up November 4th and Auburn in the search, and I got the next day's reports, and I got so much information. It's amazing. The book is just overflowing. In other words, if you didn't want to get a copy of this book and you wanted to get this information, you could do it, but you'd have to spend months and a lot of money on newspaper subscriptions. And who wants to do that? Just get this book and you got the whole thing in one package. I did all the work for you, and you and I did all the analysis and the discussion on top of that. So it's just loaded. Okay, that's number one. The book is done. You and I may, like, for example, here's a change I made yesterday. I realized I was talking to a friend of mine who's a Georgia grad, really good friend of mine. He can't help it. He's a Georgia guy. And I realized he's going to want to see it to see where Uga tried to bite Robert Baker, right? The infamous 1996 Auburn-Georgia game. That, I went back and looked it up. I had not, you and I didn't talk about that in the commentary part, and I hadn't found anything about it in the news part. So I went and I just put in a little paragraph about it, that it happened, okay? Because it's a famous moment in Auburn history, even if mm-hmm. we don't like it. I just put a little paragraph that it happened. I described it. And then I have a quote from a Georgia player, which is pretty funny about it, okay? I thought, oh, that's cute. He said something funny. I'm not going to spoil it, but I put a little quote in there. So that's an example of something I went, oh, that should be in there, and I forgot. So I went in and put that in. Other than that, though, and again, you're looking at it now. Anything you find that you want to change or add or whatever, be fine. Otherwise, I think we're pretty much done. Here's the other important announcement that I'm breaking for the first time here, and I'll tweet it tomorrow. Yard sale artist Jared Albrecht has contributed 10 or 12. Oh, gosh, I can't remember the number now. I'm so sorry. Jared's going to be mad. He's going to be like, dude, because I was working on him for so long. I was just looking at the... I can tell you right now. I messed something up. Oh, well. Either 10 or 12. I forget which. I'm sorry, Jared. Jared Albrecht has contributed 10 or 12 full-page illustrations of Shug Jordan, Pat Dye, Terry Bowden, and then players like Damian Craig, Tracy Rocker, Bo Jackson, Lionel James, Stan White, just... I keep trying to go forward, but we're not past, it goes to 98. So players of that era. And they're really awesome. And so I have them spaced out through the book in the appropriate places. And so we appreciate Jared doing that to give even more appeal, right? Why would anybody not want to copy this book at this point? I don't understand. I don't understand why you wouldn't want it. It's huge. It's got beautiful illustrations of our players and coaches, and it's got all this stuff. So how could anybody, I ask you, how can anybody not want it?
I don't know, Van. I spent the last several days reading the final draft, and it's great. It's really good. It's well done. It's got a lot of great, interesting facts in it. It's got the really cool drawings by Jared in it that really add something to it. And I think it's a, and we have a lot of perspective from interesting people and commentary in the book, which I think adds a lot to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff that wasn't in the pod. That's one thing I want to emphasize. If you've listened to the podcast, that's great. This goes well beyond that. Because the only thing that John and I could really include in the podcast was our conversation and then like some audio clips from the games, like, you know, Ron Franklin or Keith Jackson or something, or Jim Fife, right? This, though, we've got Cole Kubelik breaking stuff down. We've got, he breaks down Damian Craig as a quarterback, which I thought was really interesting to get his perspective on that. Mike McClendon goes in and breaks down basically Bear Bryant and Doug Barfield. That early section talking about Bear Bryant, Doug Barfield, and Pat Dye, I was just on the edge of my seat through that whole thing. I was like, oh, people are going to love this because I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that part.
It's good stuff in there.
It really is. There's all kind of good stuff. So I think you guys are going to really like it. It's going to be on sale about the beginning of August. That's the goal, is to have it on sale beginning of August. I'm going to have a stack of them with me at Dragon Con. I know a good number of our listeners go to Dragon Con and come to my reading. If you come to my reading, I'm going to read a part that I put together for you that I think you'll really enjoy. It's like probably take about 10 minutes for that, and then I'll do other stuff. But I always do an Auburn thing at my reading because half my crowd is usually Auburn Twitter people, and I'll do that, I promise. And I'll have the books for sale there. So I'm excited, as you can tell.
He should be. It's really good. Advantage done a tremendous amount of work on it in the past few months and taking it from, you know, kind of an idea and some roughed stuff to a finished product. And it's really good.
So. Well, it was your idea 100%. You said, let's take this and do a book. And, you know, you and I worked on it and worked on it. It was a whole lot of work for both of us just to get it from audio to writing. And then once we did that, we, you know, I'm like, we need more. We need more. It needs more. And there came a point where I said, it's got to be like one of those works of art where you just abandon it. You know, I could keep adding stuff until it's 1,000 pages long, honestly. But I have other things to do in my life than keep adding stuff to it.
That's the only good thing about football season coming, Van, is that you at some point you have to walk away from it.
I had to. Yeah. Yeah. And plus, I know that eventually we're going to do volume 2. And I think about how much work we both put into volume 1. And I'm like, oh, Lord, this. Let me put it this way. This thing better sell, because if after all this and nobody buys it, I'm going to have very little incentive to do volume 2. But we got to do volume 2. We got to.
Got to.
Oh, because we got to get all the Tuberville stuff and the Cam, the 2010 season by alone. I mean, you know. Oh, I don't know if you've gotten there yet, but you may notice that like what, 30 pages of the book is just the first time ever 1989 Iron Bowl.
It's great stuff.
So many quotes from players, from coaches. I'm just like, there's a really good Bill Curry quote that I found that I'm like, oh, I got to put that in there. There's just so much. I found a ton. So anyway, all right. I think people are really going to enjoy it, and I hope that they do. Let's see, a couple of other updates. The Fantasy Formula One League is going on. And I'm going to give an update on that in just a second. But also, I wanted to let you guys know that we're planning a new podcast. And I've said before, we're not going to make a new channel out of it until we get 150 patrons. When we get 150 patrons, then I think we can afford to get one more channel just for movie reviews. But in the meantime, we're going to just put it in the White Rocket Entertainment feed. So we're recording our first couple of them this coming week. We're going to do Ocean's 11. And if you want to be in on the ground floor and you're not already subscribed to White Rocket Entertainment, that's the sister podcast to this one. Just go. And John and I have been on there for years talking about things like Game of Thrones and James Bond and stuff. We do it all the time. We haven't done one lately because I've been doing a lot of convention stuff and we haven't really had time. But we're going to do a every week or every 2 weeks movie review of fun movies we love over the last few years. I got a whole stable of reviewers that are going to join us too. And so go and subscribe to White Rocket Entertainment and the sister show of this show. And we'll be doing like weekly or biweekly movie reviews pretty constantly going forward from now, starting with Ocean's 11. And also I think we're going to do The Revenant coming up soon too. So, all right, here is your quick Fantasy Formula One update. In number one, after we just had the second Austria race, is Blue Tiger Racing. That's me. I'm somehow number one because I have Red Bull team. Number two is Teaming McTeam Face with Daniel O. Congratulations on being up in second place. I think he joined late and zoomed up to number two. Number three is RAS's Racers. That's Richard Stevens. Good old Richard, our great friend of the show, Richard Stevens, is in number three position. Way to go, Richard. Number four is Del Taco Racing, the famous team run by Mira, my daughter, my younger daughter. Del Taco is in fourth place. And the fifth place, oh, I got to go down one more because fifth place is my second. Everybody gets two teams. Fifth place is Scuderia Plexico Rosso. Number six is G2G Racing Team, Jared's team. I'll go ahead and a couple more because other people. Number seven is Rob Morgan's team, Vesper. Number eight is Three Brits Plus, Alan Porter, who is my co-host on the Bond shows. And number nine is Daniel O's other team, Spinala. And finally, number 10 is Eric Morgan with, I think it's, I said Rob, is it Rob Morgan and Eric? I'm sorry, guys. Well, one is Rob M and the other is Eric M, and I'm thinking on my feet. That would be Team Scuderia Aquila Guerra, which is like Team War Eagle. Oh, okay, Scuderia Aquila Guerra, it's Team War Eagle. I get it, yeah. Very nice, well done. All right, so that's where things stand right now. There are other teams, but that's the top 10. All right. So that's the kind of wacky fun you get to have as a patron of our program. Just go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and hit on the big orange button to become a patron and join the ranks of folks like these. We have to thank the following folks who keep our program on the air. We have Chris and Clinton Stewart. We have Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Patrick Hayes, I believe is our newest member. Welcome aboard, Patrick. We're so glad to have you. And Samuel Salvatore, been around forever. We appreciate you too, just like Christopher and Carl. We have the great Bart Lindsay and Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher and Gary Grant, Logan Chilton. I mean, you guys have all been around forever, and you know we appreciate you so much. Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, there's Richard. Richard Stevens, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden is awesome. Ann Kanjian is great. We've seen her a few times in person. AU Falling Up. Ben and Eileen Dover. We have a name, a changed name. So I have to make a note, actually, there for the book. I'll change their name in the book. We have Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan. There's Eric. I knew I had his name right. Eric Morgan. George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming. Awesome. Can't wait to see them at Dragon Con. John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Steve Harlan, Timothy, W.D. Ritchie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, and Chris the Hilton. Love you guys. Colby Butler, Danny Flack, and Darius Benton. And then we have, as fast as the internet will click, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, any day now, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, there's Rob, I did have it right, there are two Morgans, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger, okay, it's Bob Sammons, Alex Nguyen, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brandon Smith, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrick, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, looking forward to seeing you at DragonCon 2. Kenneth Brent Rains, Christian Thorvaldson, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vishakana, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland. I think I'll see them at DragonCon 2. Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brent Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Again, www.auwishbone.com. Sign up, become a member. Join your name to that list. Help us to do the new movie podcast in addition to everything else. We do not do ads. You don't have to listen to weird ads on this show. You just hear the list of names of people that we love. All right, John, I believe we have a Guess the Game. Are you ready for Guess the Game?
Bring it on.
All right. Here comes Jared's latest installment. I believe this is number 19 of the Guess the Game segment, everybody's new favorite segment. Here we go.
Hello, John, Van, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game, episode 19. Here we have a send-in from our old friend Auburn Elvis. And you know what? Let's just get to it.
To throw it wide open. Touchdown. And the new tight end with the touchdown grab.
How about that? His first catch as an Auburn Tiger is a touchdown. Mentioned a freshman from Lasseter High School. I talked to earlier before the game, and he was concerned about how his high school did last night. The Lasseter Trojans beat the Kell Longhorns and extended their record to 3-0. That's what he was excited about. But he gets that. This one will top that, I think. A touchdown on his first reception as an Auburn Tiger.
All right. A lot of high school clues involved in that. So, wonder if that helped you at all. I guess I'll see you in the hint file.
You know, I think it's really cool that by total accident, we had a tight end question on the night that we talked about tight ends.
It is weird. And that's cool. I like it, but it's not helping me right now.
It's not. Well,
a tight end who caught their first pass for a touchdown
right.
in their first game.
It didn't sound like it was 100 years ago either.
No.
It wasn't like, oh, he came out on the field. He's got it. It's what the kids call a touchdown. No, it wasn't that.
Pass. Yes. That newfangled invention. No, it was the last 5 years, I'm guessing.
Yeah, sounded like it. And it said Lasseter High School, which is in Marietta, Georgia.
Okay.
If that helps.
What about who's the guy who's the junior or senior tight end now for us? The veteran guy. Yeah, we got Luke Deal and the Fromm brother.
I think of those two when I think of tight end right now, but who's our other guy? I can't.
Schenker.
Oh, John Samuel Schenker. Another three name.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's from Georgia.
I don't know. Did he come in as a freshman or did he transfer?
No, he's been on the team the whole time.
Okay. I mean, I honestly, we're going to have to hear the clues before we commit because I don't.
Yeah, so we're going to have to hear the clues. But so my going into the clues, I'm thinking Shankers will be a senior this fall, so that would be like 2017. He was a freshman, and a pass from Stidham.
Stidham, yeah.
To Schenker, that's my guess right now.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But which game it happened in?
Oh God. Well,
let's listen to the clues and then we can.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your options. I mean, you know, it could have happened against Washington in the first week of the 18 season.
Could have.
Oh man.
Let's listen to the clue and then we'll try to narrow it down.
I think we're gonna have to. We need help. We need help us. All right, here comes the clue.
Well, hello, lads. We are now in the hint file, so let's get some bleeps out of there and see if this helps you at all.
Burns to throw it wide open. Touchdown. Who? And the new tight end, Philip Lutzenkirchen, with the touchdown grab.
How about that? His first catch as an Auburn Tiger is a touchdown. Philip Lutzenkirchen mentioned a freshman from Lasseter High School. I talked to Philip earlier before the game, and he was concerned about how his high school did last night. The Lasseter Trojans beat the Kell Longhorns and extended their record to 3-0. That's what he was excited about. But he gets that. This one will top that, I think. A touchdown on his first reception as an Auburn Tiger.
There you go. Good luck, Van and John. I will see you in the answer file.
Right. Who is the 2009 quarterback?
Was it 9? 11 was his. Wait, what?
He played, and I know he had catches in 10 and 11.
Right. 11 was his last year.
Was he a freshman in 10?
Did he play in 12? I feel like he was gone by 2012.
I think he was gone then.
I think he played in, I know he played in 10 and 11. So his freshman year, did he leave as a junior or did he leave as a senior?
I don't know. So I'm saying, the quarterback in 9 was.
Todd, right? Chris Todd.
Is that the name he said? I think that's the name he said. But listen to the good
Yeah. If it's Burns, it's 8. And if it's Todd, it's 9.
Well, hello, lads. We are now in the hint file, so let's get some bleeps out of there and see if this helps you at all.
Burns to throw it. Wide open. What did he say?
He said Burns. Burns. So you think it's eight?
All right, we think it's eight. All right, John, the we played Louisiana Monroe on pay-per-view, and then we played Southern Miss on Raycom. That sounded like a Raycom guy to me. And we scored 27 points on them. And by the way, the third week was Mississippi State, and that was the infamous 3-2 game. So he didn't we didn't score a touchdown.
Let's say the Southern Miss game in 2008.
2008 Southern Miss. The only other game of note early on that season was LSU the fourth week, and it was on ESPN. That could have been that, but I feel like in a number six LSU versus number 10 Auburn, I feel like we'd have had better announcers than whoever that guy was. You know what I mean? We'd have had better announcers.
Really denigrating the announcer quality here to get the answer, but I'm with you. I'm fine saying it's that Southern Miss game.
It's either Southern Miss. Well, we played CBS. Tennessee was on CBS. That wasn't a CBS guy, I don't think. I'm just looking to see. Oh, there's that Vanderbilt game that I was at. Oh, gosh, where we lost. Oh, man, things sure took a downhill turn very quickly that year. Wow. You know, after September 27th, we won one more game. Dang. All right. Let's roll the dice on Southern Miss 2008. And, who knows? We got about a 20% chance of getting this right, I think.
All right, Van, John, if you guys decided that this was Auburn playing Mississippi State in 2009, then your decision was correct.
Wow.
First catch for old Philip Lutzenkirchen ends up being his first touchdown, and he'd make a few key touchdowns for us over the years. And, well, I think we all miss Philip Lutzenkirchen. But I want to thank Auburn Elvis for sending that in. And if you have a send-in idea for Guess the Game, you can hit me up directly on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Yard Sale Artist. Back to you, Van and John, and War Eagle.
All right, so, well, first, thanks to Jared and thanks to Auburn Elvis for that. That's always fun.
Yeah, they do. A good clue for us, a challenging one.
It was a challenging one. I'm looking at that game right now. It was 49-24. It was week two of 2009, so I bet we were out rolling out the freshman.
But Burns came in at the relief quarterback role.
Clean up.
Okay. Yeah.
Throwing it to a freshman. It makes sense now.
Hitting us with the the extra time scores, the clearing the bench scores. That's the extra degree of difficulty here, but I appreciate it. That was a really good one. Because the Burns thing threw us off. It was a real curveball.
It was. That was very effective. That was very good. And again, we're not complaining. We appreciate that. We enjoy the challenging ones that make us think. Absolutely. That's a lot of fun.
That was good.
And again, the timing was perfect because we were just talking about Lutzy and the tight ends. And it was the anniversary right of his passing very recently, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just other day. Which, again, I always like to use that as a point to say, kids, don't drink and drive. Wear your seatbelt, please. Okay. I've lost high school friends. That same issue. Let's see. Do we? I think we probably do. I'm going to go ahead and hit the button and let them hit the gavel here.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun dun dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Blame yourself.
All right. What have we got? I did, by the way, send out the clarion call on one of the Auburn Facebook groups. I only had time to do one because I was moving furniture. But hopefully somebody, did we get any questions?
We got questions.
Okay.
The clarion call was answered.
Yes.
First question from friend of the podcast, and the person does a great job with the Guess the Game segments, Jared.
Oh, yeah.
The yard sale artist.
I've heard of him.
All right. Here's his question. It's a good one. Akron, Alabama State, Georgia State. Auburn has an opportunity to win in Baton Rouge for the first time since 1999. Would you take a loss to any of those three teams above if it guaranteed the breaking of the voodoo curse? And if so, which team would you take the loss from?
So it's Akron.
And Akron, Alabama State, Georgia State.
All right, here's the deal. I love the premise and the spirit of the question, but I have a personal problem with that premise, which is that we don't lose those games. Alabama, every so often, used to would lose one of those. They lost to UA. They lost to Louisiana Tech.
Yep.
In one of their good years. LSU lost UAB one time under Saban.
They lost to Troy a couple years ago.
Yes, yes. We don't lose those games. And so as much as I want to beat LSU, for me, that's too high of a price. What do you think?
If you had to pay a price, if it was going to happen, and the price was losing one of those three games, and you had to choose which of those three games was the most acceptable to lose. I know that's not the way. Again, I'm with you. I think the same way as you. I wouldn't pay that price.
No.
But if we had to pay that price, Akron, Alabama State, Georgia State, who would you give it to?
Well, what I would do is say, who scheduled those three? Because those are three teams that you just – like if it was Georgia Southern, you're like, well, you know, they rise up and beat Florida every now and then or something. Mm-hmm. They're one of those teams. They're like Navy, you know. Every now and then they run that weird offense and they can get you. Those three, though, I mean
– Georgia State beat Tennessee a couple years ago. Akron, no longer coached by Terry Bowden.
Yeah, that makes it a little easier to swallow. I couldn't tolerate losing to Terry Bowden's Akron team. I would just, That would be my low point.
But I mean, how about an Akron team that Terry Bowden has let fall apart and then left?
And then they beat us? Oh my gosh. You know, by the way, speaking of Terry Bowden, I was reading a review, a preview of his Louisiana. Monroe, is he at Louisiana? He's at one of the directional Louisiana schools, right, to start out for the first time. Yes. And they're like, this team is so bad. Their goal this year is to win a game. A game. They're so bad. They're like, you know how they have like the an opposing coach says? The opposing coach is like, they've fallen behind every other team in this conference, which is not a great conference. So, I mean, they're losing to like Texas Texas State or whatever. They're losing to one of those Texas schools you rarely even hear of by like 70-3 or something. So, but anyway, it's a great question. I hate it. And I guess Akron, just because they are, you don't want to lose to Georgia State, for God's sake, surely. And Alabama State,
an in-state school, I think, would make it, you just hear about it forever. Again, yeah. I'd like the idea of picking Alabama State because I'd be happier for them, I guess, but that would just be tough. So and Georgia State's a commuter school in Atlanta. I can't do that.
I feel like this is the kind of thing where like Satan, okay, at the crossroads, Satan met with Jack Crow when he took over the Arkansas job, and Satan said, Jack, if you will allow your Arkansas team to lose to Citadel in week one, I'll let you upset Alabama later in the season. And Jack's like, you got a deal, Satan. And so they lost to Citadel, and they fired him the next day. He coached one game. So it's like, how do you get to that upset of LSU if we fire you after you lose to Alabama State? It's a trick question. You see what I mean? You don't get to coach for that upset against LSU because we fire you for losing that first game.
It is a trick question.
Yeah. So I don't – it's the Kobayashi Maru, the unwinnable scenario.
All right. That was a good question from Jared. We got a few more here. This is from Jacob Fleming.
Yes.
Hey, guys, what do you think is the most consequential game of the upcoming football season? I think it's easy to say Georgia or Alabama, so I'm going in a different direction. I'm leaning towards Penn State for two reasons. The first being – we played relatively well in these primetime intersectional games in the past decade, beside that one Clemson game I have unsuccessfully purged from my memory. The second is that it would be a great barometer for how far the program has come under Harsin. I'm calling it now. If Auburn beats Penn State in Happy Valley, they will end the streak of misery and futility in Death Valley 2 weeks later. War Eagle, Jacob.
All right, Jared, here's a little... counter programming. Yeah, your premise was great, but I hated it. Where it's like, which one do we have to lose to win at LSU? But Jacob is saying, if we win a game, we win at LSU. I kind of like that a little bit better. So, and I'm sure I know Jared pretty well now. I'm sure he's sitting there going, "Man, that's a much better premise than the one I came up with. I like it." So, I can see where he's coming from. Honestly, to me, we've lost so many of these early out-of-conference Power 5 games. The only ones I can remember us winning are Kansas State, Washington, and Oregon the last few years. But other than that, we always seem to lose them. That honestly, for me, the pivotal game this year, LSU would be great. But that Georgia October 9th, I feel like if we can beat Georgia on October 9th, the whole second half of the season looks a lot more doable. And if we go and get killed in Jordan-Hare by Georgia, especially if we've lost at LSU the week before or lost at Penn State or something, then we're just trying to get to a bowl game or something. So I just at the quickest glance, the Georgia game seems awfully like the fulcrum in which the season can kind of go either way. What's your thoughts?
I mean, I like where Jacob was going with Penn State, just because the first two games are kind of these non-conference cupcakey kind of games that we're not going to really know anything about this team.
That's true.
Or about the change that Harsin and his staff have wrought in this team. And we aren't going to know it until they get thrown in the fire at Penn State. And then we're going to learn something. So that's why I like that pick, because I think we're going to know, you know, it could be a game where they can, you know, even if they don't win, if they play really well and make plays and do stuff, they may come out of that game with some confidence, you know, that things they can build on. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's something I'm thinking about. So.
But I agree that if we win against Penn State, it does raise the likelihood that we could win at LSU.
That's right.
It sucks, though, that our two big Power 5 games through October 2nd are both on the road. I hate it that – I'm glad that Harsin gets two home games before those two games. I just wish they were something a little better than Akron and Alabama State, because we're going to come out of Akron and Alabama State thinking we've got, you know, a Super Bowl team.
Well, maybe, but also I think we'll – you know, we're not going to know anything really, like I said, until we get in the fire at Penn State. But I'm – I like that we, because it's a new staff, things are going to go wrong. Things are, you know, they're not going to work right. And so I'm glad they have those non-conference easier games to work it out. So,
yeah. One thing I wanted to mention a second ago about the LSU thing. We're talking about winning at LSU again for the first time since 1999, which seems ridiculous until you realize one of the things I discovered in the research in the book was we've only won at LSU three times since 1939. Shug Jordan never won there. Doug Barfield never won there. And Pat Dye never won there. Now, we didn't play him that often back then. But between 1939, the year our stadium was built, and now, we've only won three times in Baton Rouge. And interestingly enough, one of those was Tuberville, the 1999 game, his first year, right? The one we've just been talking about. The other two, who coached him? Who coached Auburn in their other two wins since 1939?
Terry
Bowden, 93 and 97. That's it. We beat them three times in the 90s down there, and that's the only time we've beaten them since 39. It's crazy. And, you know, the weird thing is Alabama had this streak going where they won in LSU every other year. I mean, they won every, you know, they played them every other year. They won there every time for like 20 years. Do you remember that back in like the 80s and 90s or 70s and 80s or whatever?
Yeah.
They had a long streak of winning in LSU.
All right. We got a couple more questions.
Okay.
This is from Dan Thompson, also related to one of our earlier discussions this evening. Which current player would you want to do a paid endorsement of the AU Wishbone? What would you want for them to say? I'm waiting for the day when someone plugs the wishbone in a press conference. He says, Anders, what was going through your mind when you lined up for the game-winning field goal to defeat LSU in Baton Rouge? And again, a theme here this evening. Yeah. Well, as an avid listener of the AU Wishbone, I just didn't want to let John Van down.
Oh, man. All right, it's worth it. I'll pay any price at this point. I gotta have it. I was dubious at first, but I've been swayed by the press conference scenario. I like it. By the way, you have frozen on my screen. Have I frozen on your screen?
No.
Okay, you have frozen on mine. So you're either very relaxed or you're frozen. So, but it doesn't matter because your audio is fine. So don't worry about it.
All right, keep going. Two more emails.
Let's do it.
These are emails to aewishbone@gmail.com. This one is from Auburn Elvis, who supplied the Guess the Game, and he says, Dear John Devan, I think Jared used my Guess the Game suggestion this week, and while I bet you got the scoring player, you probably had trouble with the opponent. Sorry about that. I really wanted something featuring that player. He says, how do you think the name, image, and likeness day went? Were there any endorsements that surprised you? Can you give us an idea of which athletes the show is targeting for a sponsorship? Well, we don't know. The only surprise that there's a number of Auburn players that are endorsing an underwear brand, I believe. So I think that'll be something to keep an eye on. But, I mean, there was really the brief moment between, when Alabama fans were saying they're never going to drink Milo sweet tea again because of the Bo Nix endorsement, but then they signed an Alabama player too, so it's fine. But,
oh, that's okay. They can go back to drinking it again.
That's it.
Oh, brothers.
I looked around again. There was one of my favorites was there was a basketball player for, I think, Iowa State that did a public appearance at a fireworks stand like on July, 2nd or 3rd. I thought that was really good. It's like he's a great 3-point shooter. He drops bombs. Come get your bombs at our fireworks stand. so I appreciate it. I like that. And there were a few other good ones out there, but it's still early. So it'll be exciting to see, what happens. I think three big national players signed deals with the Raising Cane's, but you'll be interested in.
Oh man, yeah, wow. Well, ours opens up in just a few weeks, so. I've been carefully monitoring, and by monitoring, I mean I drive by there and look out the window. Yeah. Been very carefully monitoring the progress that they're making at our location here, so I'm very excited.
Creepily stalking the construction.
Yeah, I've been creepily stalking the construction. That's fair to say, yeah.
All right, our last email, this is from a friend of the podcast, Rusty Owens, who says, I'm signing up this week for Patreon. I have two names, and I can't decide between them.
Ah.
Option A, there goes Davis. Option B, Virginia double dribbled.
Oh, yeah. So you got
any help would be greatly appreciated.
You got the two sports. Well, I mean, they're both great. You could change them. You could put one in now, and then after a little while, you could go to the other and kind of switch back and forth. Again, one of the things that I don't remember if I told you this before, John, but I do the names on our Babylon 5 show. Andy Fix and I do every other Tuesday, and I told him how that worked, and I said, yeah, people are now going in and putting things in their name just to get me to say them on the air. And he said, that's like the number one benefit right there. I'd sign up just for that, just to get you to say certain things. So
there you go. You want to make Van say funny stuff.
That's it. That's it. That's exactly right. And I'm going to go in and fix Ben, too, so that it's in the book properly. I'm assuming he changed it so that we have it in the book right, so that'll be good.
Do you have a strong feeling between those two for Rusty?
I think he should switch back and forth between football season and basketball season.
I like it. So it's season relevant. So football season, it's there goes Davis.
Yeah, do 6 months of one and 6 months of the other, or do football through the summer and the fall, and then the basketball one in the winter and the spring. Yeah, sure.
That's it.
I like it.
All right. Thank you again for those really good listener questions, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
And again, by the way, I'm the book is set, but I can still go in and tweak things. So if you want. Right now, everybody's name is going in the book. That's your display name I read on the air. If you want something different, either change it on Patreon immediately, or even better, just send me a message, a tweet, an email, a message on Patreon. Just somehow let me know. Tell me what your name is currently, what name I should look for and what I should change it to. I want everybody to be happy, okay? I don't want you to get the book and go, oh, they put that. That's not who I am. That's just something fun. So if you have a specific thing you want your name to say in the book, just contact me directly and say and make sure you tell me what your name currently is so I'll know which to change to what, okay? Does that make sense? Does that make sense, John?
It does.
All right, there you go. All right, is that the last of the questions?
That is the last of the questions. Thank you for our listeners. That was really good today.
We do have a take a trip real quick.
Please clap.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Well, our only around the SEC thing is we made the announcement in the last week or two of which game we are traveling to for our big AU Wishbone road game road trip. And that game is, John?
Texas A&M, first weekend in November.
We are going to College Station. John and I are going back to College Station. And we're going to film fun, wacky stuff. We're going to record good stuff. We're even going to do like a movie review as part of our trip, which will be fun for the other podcast. We're going to do a lot of cool stuff and just hang out. And part of that is we're going to eat, and we plan to eat well, I think is fair to say. So what are you interested in getting from our listeners, John?
I'm really interested in is, you know, again, we've had some good Twitter discussion about barbecue places, and that's always helpful, but also other places to eat while we're there in the area. We're coming in from Houston to College Station. It's been a few days. So, you know, other places in the area that you would say, but also beyond think places to eat, if there are things that we should do other than, you know, the pregame activities in the stadium, whatever, let us know and we will do that.
Yeah. So imagine, to understand our itinerary, we're going to fly into Houston on a Thursday night, and then we will drive over to College Station. We'll be there on Friday. And then obviously Saturday for the game, we're going to come home on Sunday. So don't tell us like some cool place in El Paso or Amarillo or something, because that ain't going to help us. It's got to be something we can get to in a reasonable amount of time between Houston and College Station or in those environs, because we're not going to want to do like a 3-hour each way side trip that's going to take up, you know, half the day. It needs to be something relatively convenient to our existing driving plan from Houston to College Station back. But yeah, I'm looking for it. I got to get on the again, the patron's going to come to our rescue. I'm going to get a little bit of video equipment, and we're going to be able to record our conversations in the car and record our some of our stuff before the game and do a bunch of other stuff, and it should be a whole lot of fun. I just have to learn how to edit. That's my next project. I just keep moving from one new skill set to another, John.
You're a renaissance man.
It's by necessity, so yeah. Or I could just like send it all to Auburn Elvis and say, edit this together for us, Elvis, and we'll see what he does. He probably screams, new phone, what he'll say. okay. Well, anything else before we close up tonight?
No, this is my last question for you. Are you a fireworks person? What's your view on this?
When I was a youngster, I was a fireworks person, but I haven't shot a firework off in many years. And we go over to the Columbia, Illinois, right on the river park, and they do a good show every year. But it's mainly just because my wife and my daughter enjoy, you know, getting out and picnicking and sitting on a blanket and shooting and watching the fireworks go off and then coming back home. So, and by the way, this year we had really good weather for it. It was like the first time we hadn't baked to death. It was actually very cool. So, but that's the extent of it.
You know, when my children were younger, we would buy fireworks and I would shoot them off, like at the end of the driveway with the neighbors and that kind of thing. And some of my neighbors do that now for their kids, and we just stand out there and watch. And then you got the neighbors that might go to South Carolina and bring back the heavy artillery, and they're blowing stuff up 20 feet over the trees or whatever. So we generally don't go to, you know, serious fireworks shows. We just watch it around. But, you know, it's just be careful out there.
Yeah, the main thing I've been seeing today was all the tweets of people's dogs that were scared, and I felt kind of bad because it seems like everybody's pets just don't like the fireworks. They were all, you know, huddling up in fear, and it made me feel kind of bad. So I guess for us humans, it's exciting, but for them, it's like a strange intrusion on their little world, and I, you know, so oh well. All right. Well, I guess that does it for another 4th of July, for another Wishbone. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
For you, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.